Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine, the last ones for spring training. This is breaking camp day as we record this, and this will be our season preview edition. So, Pat, with that in mind, the roster has been set, and I think the big news, right, was, by the way, this is Pat Brennan. I'm Gordon Whitmire.
Hey, can I just stop and praise us for recording in the shade of a tree today?
Yeah, we found a tree.
I don't know what it looks like optically on your screen, but for us, this is a real respite from just some, like, seriously, some brutal heat here right at the end of camp.
It's been like the last 5 days of camp, 100-plus degrees. It was like 106 yesterday.
Like clearing 100 easily, so yeah. It's been very trying.
And we had
mostly
to
for the athletes.
We're on the minor league side of camp here as we find this cool tree.
Yeah.
This nice little shade.
I like it back here on the backfields, don't you?
Maybe we just stay here.
I'd go for that.
You think our boy Shelby can cover the opener?
Solo?
J-Dub will be there.
Oh, they're fine.
That'll be fine. We'll just stay right here.
Absolutely. It's nice in the shade.
And I think we were talking about the season.
We were.
So
yeah, 26 man is set.
Yeah, and so the last guy, the big decision was whether you keep the lefty extra outfielder in JJ Blade, or you keep yet another first baseman, nice lefty hitter in Nathaniel Lowe, and they picked and despite Sal Stewart being on a roster.
Gold Glove finalist,
and bringing in Gino Suarez, Lowe makes the roster.
Yeah,
Tito talked to us. You talked to Lowe. Give us the lowdown on this.
Very good. The thing that I found interesting about the conversation with Tito for his part in it was the breakdown of the role and how that ultimately informed the final decision, because this is a bench role, and Reese Hines, Terry made it very clear that when he had a conversation with Reese Hines, who missed out because of Lowe making the team, as well as J.J. Blade, but with regard to Hines, Francona said it wasn't a case of you didn't make the team. What he told Reese Hines was, you were good enough to make the team, but he's still young. They want Reese Hines as well as J.J. Blade to play every day. That gives them really good depth going into this season.
Take a look at their outfield at AAA.
Yeah.
Throw Blake Dunn into that group. That's pretty good depth.
Pat Kelly's got some high expectations in AAA this year, results-wise, wouldn't you say?
I'd say sort of like the big league club.
Yeah.
A lot of high expectations.
That's funny how that can trickle down. But and then, like,
and by the way, Tito did say he thinks he's got more depth here than certainly he had last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And really maybe than they've had in quite a while around here.
So I had a chance to talk to Nathaniel Lowe about making the team here on the camp break day. And I think, number one, he was happy to make the team. So the role, you know, any role on the 26-man roster, he was going to be okay with. But I think whereas Tito downplayed, I thought the significance of Lowe's glove and
Gold Glove first baseman.
Yeah, World Series champion. Don't leave that out.
Right.
Lowe thinks he can be a really positive influence on Sal Stewart. Not that Spencer Steer would have done Sal any harm whatsoever. He wouldn't have.
Right, right.
But
and Mike Napoli did wonders with as coaching up Steer last year, helped turn him into a Gold Glove finalist. He's been working with Sal too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reason to think Sal will meet the standard there. And if for some reason he doesn't, you have other options.
And tons of
Lowe gives you a really solid one. But it's also a steady bat off the bench. I think he ended up hitting. He went into the second to last game of the spring hitting around 270 I think more than half of his hits were home runs, so that's good power.
Two of those home runs were monster shots.
Unbelievable. So I haven't been on this beat as long as you have, Gordon, but I've seen plenty of home runs, wind-assisted home runs even, at Goodyear Ballpark, and Nathaniel Lowe hit one of the longest home runs I've ever seen anywhere.
Yeah.
One hopped out of the park on the day his mother passed away, no less. So yeah. It's also a good story there with Nathaniel Lowe. Mother passed away mid-camp. He stayed for a variety of reasons. We wrote about that. That's not a callous
thing. Yeah, you should check that out.
Pat
wrote about it. It's a really good story.
I appreciate you saying that, Gordon, but I just want to make it clear. That wasn't a callous thing by Nathaniel Lowe. It was a long battle with cancer for his mother, and I think he had felt like he had kind of said goodbye a number of times. So staying in camp was the right move for him. And from a professional standpoint and personal, I think that was ultimately a rewarding and a good decision when you look at it from both sides.
And it almost needed to, you know, the reason I left out Rhys Hines when I mentioned beating out Bladé
for
that job
sure.
is because that last job almost had to be a left-handed bat.
Yeah.
Because there's so many right-handers that are going to be in the lineup and get the lion's share of the playing time that they need to be able to have some options off the bench. And some of these, and obviously the glove is so huge because it gives you late inning defense if you choose to do that.
Yeah.
You bring him in to pinch hit. You can leave him in. You don't need two guys to cover that for you if you got a one-run lead late, that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of value there in that regard. Speaking of the lineup, last day of camp, Tito gave us sort of a reversal, not really a reversal, but kind of a shift off
yeah.
of what his original vision for the opening day lineup might look like compared to when he came into camp
yeah.
with Eugenio Suarez freshly arrived and probably slotting naturally into the cleanup spot
yeah.
behind Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, the idea was that this was going to be the protection for Ellie that he didn't have last year on
yeah.
any sort of consistent basis. But he's been batting Sal Stewart in the cleanup spot.
And Gino hasn't been around, and he's seen a lot
yeah.
more of Sal Stewart than he has of Gino lately,
and
right?
Sal Stewart has just, I wouldn't say under the radar, but he's just kind of had a great camp.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and all this guy has ever done as long as I've ever seen him, whether it was in camp as a minor leaguer or breaking in as a rookie last year or this camp,
mm-hmm.
is hit. And nothing suggests that, I mean, this guy's a mature hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things Tito pointed out was he runs the bases really well.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like a speedster, and he's not a classic speedster, but he's got deceptive speed. And he's really heads up.
Yeah.
So when you consider that that if Ellie's on base, that's a lot of wheels right there. And you got a guy right behind him that can't really keep up, but that's a good trailer.
He still runs the base as well.
He still runs
yeah.
the base as well. So if Ellie makes something happen, you're going to get some benefit out of having
yeah.
Sal there if he's on a base behind him. And then you got Suarez coming right behind those guys. And Tito says, he kind of likes the idea of this giving maybe Gino more opportunity to drive in more runs.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it tracks. And there's one other thing Tito mentioned, which was putting Sal in between Ellie, a noted strikeout guy.
Yeah.
And Gino, also big strikeout guy.
Who's a 2.5 outcome guy.
Yeah, right. You're breaking that up in the lineup, so now that could be really significant.
It could be if you get if you got Ellie, Sal, Gino do a in a 6th-7th inning of a close game, and you got a strikeout guy on the mound, maybe a hard throwing setup guy coming in, and he gets Ellie. Well. Instead of Gino being right there with, you know, not being any more of a threat than a solo home run,
yeah.
now you got Sal, who really works counts, knows the strike zone really well, doesn't
yeah.
strike out a lot, and he might, if nothing else, make the guy work.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
if he makes the guy work enough and a mistake follows after that to the guy behind him, It might be a quick 2 months. Yeah, we'll anyway, see. It's just a.
I think
it's just a way to think through that sequence.
It's really interesting. You know, this is what can happen when you step away from camp for as long as Geno did for the WBC, which was obviously a really successful endeavor. But the train keeps on rolling, and that's where, you know, a couple days after Geno returns from the WBC, a conquering hero, a new quirk. And I think also, just to put it out there in the conversation since we're having it, Tito did mention that kind of jokingly, you know, he could change his mind on this on the flight out of Goodyear.
I reserve the right to make my lineup on a day-to-day basis, and I might change my mind.
And Tito is the one who is going to make that lineup. Do not try to make the lineup for him. But
yeah, you've tried.
Oh no, I haven't. But I've watched other people try and get
shot down,
swatted. Swatted away in the process. So we'll see what happens. I hate to say that because it's so cliche, but we will have to see what happens there.
We'll
get a good test run in Milwaukee these next two games.
Yeah, and I want to point out something too. Like, I don't think Tito said that this is something that they've discussed. I think that Geno not being here and using Sal a lot in that cleanup spot might have been sort of the inspiration for rethinking it or thinking it further. But they did spend a lot of time talking about this. I don't think it was just that he missed camp.
No, it's not punitive. I don't mean to suggest that.
I don't mean that. I don't think that because he missed camp, you know, somebody showed that a better way necessarily.
Right. Yeah.
I think this might have happened anyway.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of talk that went into this and a lot of thinking that went into this. And again, it could change tomorrow and you know, it'd be moot. But in the meantime, here's what your opening day lineup might look like. The top five, if what we just talked about sticks, the top five is left-handed center fielder T.J. Friedl, right-handed second baseman Matt McClain, switch-hitting shortstop Ellie De La Cruz, right-handed hitting first baseman Sal Stewart, right-handed hitting D.H. Geno Suarez. And then this is my shot at the order for 6, 7, 8, 9.
Your shot.
This is what I'm saying. So I'm making out the rest of Tito's lineup for him. Don't tell him.
Good luck.
But these guys should be in the lineup either way, in some order or another. But talking about, and they're all right-handed. Tyler Stevenson catching, Noelvi Marte in right, Spencer Steer in left field, and Ke'Bryan Hayes, the Gold Glover, at third. And with Andrew Abbott, your guy on the mound.
That's right.
The left-hander the left-hander. Garrett
Crochet says he's ready, by the way. Very quickly, he says he's ready.
He better be.
Results-wise, it wasn't the spring Andrew had hoped for, but after his last start against the Chicago White Sox here in Goodyear, here in Cactus League play, spring training, Andrew feels ready, and I think Tito affirmed that a little bit. So, great pitching matchup on paper for opening day.
Let me ask you this. So, we've talked about this throughout the spring, and the guys in the clubhouse have talked about this throughout the spring, mm-hmm. of this being a very high expectations team, coming off the playoff berth last year, looking on paper maybe significantly stronger. I'm not going to say like over the top, you know, Dodger style.
Yeah, but like the few tweaks that they made could be a big difference.
Yeah. Hunter Green, the ace of the staff, ain't going to be there until sometime in July at the earliest because he had bone chips removed from his elbow during spring training. But that position area was the area of greatest depth.
Yeah.
And so Andrew Abbott was an all-star last year. He's going to be your opening day starter. That's a pretty good place to start.
Yeah.
And then you've got three guys at the end of that rotation that are terrific young pitchers. And the lefty, Brandon Williamson, who's coming off TJ surgery, and Chase Burns, who we saw throw all those strikeouts last year.
Can I say something on Rhett Lowder?
And Rhett Lowder.
I'm sorry to cut you off, buddy.
No, not
but, so. But, you know, I think Brandon Williams, everyone is rightfully excited and hyped about Rhett Lowder and Chase Burns. But Brandon Williamson might have been the best starting pitcher in camp.
I agree with that.
He threw 13 consecutive scoreless innings and it was only in the final inning of his most recent spring training start that he finally conceded a run. And that was the first run he'd allowed since February, Gordon.
And you can't really hang your head on stats
in spring training.
As you know. I'm not saying that. But
people
this
should
is,
know, too.
But the way he pitched, the way he looked, in command, not a lot of deep counts, not a lot of walks.
Working through trouble when he had it.
When he had trouble, he got out of it.
Yeah.
And so these are all good signs. I mean, he didn't, like, you would never be able to look at him and think that he had even so much as a hiccup. That's the kind of poise he had all spring, kind of confidence he takes into the season. That's all a good sign. And the last time we saw this guy pitch, or at least finish the season, was 2023, his rookie year, when he just kept getting better. At one point, he was the best pitcher on that staff, and he broke in that year in May. So this is if this is picking up where he might have been, you know, left off a little bit, like before the injury, he's in a really good place right now.
Yeah.
And we always thought he had ceiling, and like a lot of ceiling. And so maybe he's on the verge of showing us another level of like getting closer to it. And boy, they could sure use it.
Yeah, they could. But to go back to, I think, the genesis of the point you wanted to make, I think there's still this is still an area of strength for the Reds, the pitching staff. You feel good about.
They got six guys for five spots. That you feel good about all of them.
Yeah.
And that's with Hunter Green on the IL to open the season.
There's no question that, you know, that's not to diminish the loss of Hunter Green. He's one of the best power pitchers in the game. But, and I said this when he first went down, and I still believe it today, not a lot of teams can afford to absorb that loss. And I think the Reds are about as well situated to try to attempt to, as any team in the game that I can think of, Gordon.
You know, I'll build on that point just by saying this. I think if you take all the teams in baseball coming into camp, who of all the teams who were playing, like you take the pitchers they were planning on having in their opening rotation as they came into camp.
Yeah.
Of all those teams, for any of them to lose their front guy, I think the Reds might be as equipped, better equipped than all, but maybe one or two other ones.
Yeah.
To withstand that. And especially having a pretty good idea that he'll be back maybe sometime around the All-Star break or trade deadline, like that.
If that goes to plan and the Reds have played themselves into a contending position, that could be the equivalent of a blockbuster deadline pickup to get him back.
And by the way,
if he's in good health.
Take a look at the schedule, just in time for the teeth of the schedule.
Oh, my God.
Too. So
we'll be talking about that. It's just kind of looming over the whole season, isn't it?
It is. But what's kind of amazing is, as they get ready to open the season, the Reds still look like they're in a relative position of strength with Hunter Green on the IL as they go into this season of incredible expectations.
Yeah.
And so, maybe it goes without saying, but do you think they're justified in feeling as good about themselves as they do coming in? Because they seem to think they're not only going to make the playoffs again, but win a playoff series.
Yeah.
For the first time since 1995.
Yeah, you've heard guys talk about that. And
openly,
at least acknowledging that, yes, those are the expectations. And even that can be telling.
As opposed to hopes.
Right.
And
right.
As opposed to last year when we came in thinking.
So much was predicated on hopes.
Last year they're coming off the bad season.
Yeah.
They bring the new – they fire the manager, some of the coaches, bring in a new manager and staff.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of, boy, we got to get this right.
Yeah.
We got to get this right because there's only this window of opportunity. It's like this sense of urgency. Can they get it right?
Yeah.
Will they get it right? And they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now it's swagger.
It is. They got in. So are we talking predictions here?
Well,
we can if you want to.
All right.
I know you didn't want to put me on the spot. Here's my concern, and you've worn me down on this over the months because I thought,
let's back up just a second before we get there, because I am going to put you on the spot
now.
But before we go there, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, this guy.
That's a good point. Yeah, sorry.
This guy had a quad injury last year. They kept him kept his stolen base attempts way down. Yeah. He wound up with 37 after leading the league with 67 the year before. And he went through the worst home run drought of his, you know, still young career.
Yeah.
And still finished tied for the team lead with 22 with Spencer Steer. So, I wonder, you know, with Sal in there all year long, with Gino in there all year long, behind him in the lineup, with him looking not only healthy but stronger this spring.
And a plan to keep him off his feet more.
He doesn't like that.
But it might be, it'll be to his benefit if it works out the way it's intended to, right?
Yeah.
So
if it does, I mean, he seems to think he's an MVP candidate.
Well, that's justifiable when you think about the numbers that he put up last year with that quad injury.
Yeah.
I mean, a very impressive all-star season. I think he put up a lot of those all-star worthy numbers before the quad. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he had a monster June.
Yeah. So, the injury comes into play and heavily impacts, you know, his final season stats. But a healthy Ellie De La Cruz, something
with
we didn't see.
More protection in the lineup?
It's
and how about this? He's got right around 1,800 plate appearances, which is, you know, as he approaches 2,000 plate appearances, that's a kind of a nice experience level to be at in your career to maybe take another step.
Yeah,
absolutely. Can you imagine that?
Yes, I can. I can. And I think he quite, you know, he's signing off in adventurous fashion in Goodyear. He hit a triple last night, and then in the subsequent at bat, got caught in a rundown and went diving headfirst into home plate. I think everyone held their breath, including Tito last night, because you think just what this team needs, a separated shoulder for their all-star shortstop right when camp breaks would have been a disaster. But he was okay. And he in that sequence, Gordon, he looked like he was in the mood. He looked like he was in the mood.
He's ready.
He's ready
to start. It'll be I tell you what, we mentioned predictions a moment ago. I'll tell you one prediction that I don't think is even in question here, and that's that this team is going to be worth watching. Now, if everything goes the wrong way, I mean, maybe that's only for half a season.
Yeah.
I doubt that that'll be the case, that it'll be that bad. But the point being, it's not a lawnmower. Another dumbass on a truck deciding to interrupt our podcast.
Would you care to make a little more noise?
Yeah, why don't you
just make a little more noise.
Hit the accelerator a little harder, a little closer to the tree.
Share a few words for the big pod machine?
Yeah, right?
If you're going to make noise, at least come on and say something about the Reds, right?
Yeah, anyway.
We can't catch a break out here, except for the shade.
But anyway, they're going to be a relevant team, and potentially with a lot of storylines worth watching.
Yeah, yeah. It's
so what are they going to do?
Well, see, it's funny. Go back to our predictions.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I know. You go back to our predictions last year. I think you said they would win 88 games, miss the playoffs. No.
Did I say 88?
You said.
I said like 83.
You said they would win 83 and miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
I said they would win 88 and make the playoffs. They made the playoffs with 83 wins. So we both got half of it right. I will give you credit and say that I think nailing the number of wins made you more right than me.
I agree with that.
I knew you would, naturally. But look, you have worn me down on this over the months, just on the fact of how they got in, which was, you cannot deny that the Reds did the job they needed to do head-to-head against the New York Mets, which was the team that they ultimately beat out on the final day of the regular season.
They finished tied with them.
To get in, right.
Got in on the tiebreaker.
So they did the work they needed to do against the Mets.
Yes.
They got in. The Mets did not. But there is no question that there is a consideration to acknowledge about the
Mets fell off the face of the earth
again
at the end of the season.
Again. Just the latest in a long line.
I mean, they had a massive
collapses.
Lead. They had like a six and a half.
Yeah, thought they'd come to Cincinnati. You wrote a great story going down to the Mets clubhouse.
They thought they eliminated them.
Yeah, they thought they'd put the Reds to bed in Cincinnati.
Yeah, in the first game of that series.
Yeah.
And the Reds got up off the mat again and won the last two games of that series and just hung in there.
So, look, you're putting me on the spot. I will answer the call here. I think they're a better team. They're a noticeably better team. I think they have a better record. But I don't think a team as talented as the National League is really deep.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And I don't think you count on, you look at the depth of all three divisions.
There's two teams in the National League Central, I think, are significantly better who aren't the Reds.
Yes. The NL East is deep. The West is obviously very deep. It's been producing at least two playoff teams during several years in this expanded wild card era, where six teams get in both leagues, three wild cards, that is. So I just don't know. And ultimately, gun to my head, I have to say I don't think the Reds will get to the postseason. That's not an indictment on this team, but I don't think they're there. Well, in our bold predictions, I predicted, which shouldn't necessarily be taken as what I think will actually happen this year.
And why'd you predict it?
I'm not going to get into the methodology of our bold predictions, Gordon, but you know that bold predictions, not realistic predictions.
Same thing.
I think the Reds will win 85 games. Okay. And
so you're looking at an improvement.
An improvement, but missing the playoffs.
Also an improvement for the other teams in the playoff race. I think that's fair. I'm going to go higher than that because I think they're better than two games better than last year. Even with a stronger division, like the two teams I'm talking about are the Cubs, that won 92 games last year, finished five games behind the Brewers, and got a lot better.
Won a playoff series.
Right. And then they added Bregman and Edward Cabrera to their pitching staff and improved their bullpen similar to how the Reds improved theirs.
Yeah.
So they.
And the Pirates.
And the Pirates are a lot better. They it's a pretty damn low bar with the Pirates, but I think they're good. I think they're improved enough to be possibly. Winning record good.
I think they could be a huge nuisance, which, by the way, they already were for the Reds last year.
Oh, yeah.
The Reds do not like going to PNC Park. They had to scratch and claw to get what they needed out of a series against the Pirates in the penultimate, the second-to-last series of the season.
And they took a Noelvi Marte catch. To rob a home run in the ninth inning of the last game of that series.
So, for the Reds, they already have just a tough time.
And look,
with
they're
the
going to see the Pirates in the first home stand.
And they're going to see Skeens.
And they're going to see Skeens in that series.
So your margin for error in that series goes down significantly,
To win that series, you got to win the two games that Skeens doesn't pitch on paper.
Yeah. And he's not their only decent pitcher.
Exactly.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I do think that. The Pirates could be I don't expect them to end up in the playoff conversation. I don't think you do either. But I
expect them to be in it late.
Okay. All right. And I can see that. But I do expect they play the NL Central to be maybe the determinative factor who wins this division.
On paper, there's not as many wins to be had in the division.
Yeah.
Now, that said.
That could also lower the bar.
Who knows what direction the Cardinals go? They're rebuilding. They got rid of a lot of their veterans. They've got good young players. They could be the same losing team, or they could go
south
real fast.
So you're saying maybe everyone feasts on the Cardinals and gets their wins there.
That's the one possibility. I think the Brewers aren't going to be 97 wins strong, but I don't think they're going to go completely away.
No.
So, the Pirates and the Brewers are going to be there.
Yeah.
The Reds are going to be there. The Cubs are going to be there. These are all teams that can win a series against each other any given time.
Yeah.
And you just don't know how the Cardinals are going to play. So I think that the Reds are 88 wins.
Yeah.
And I think
traditionally
maybe 90.
And
88 to 90.
I'll tell you something.
If they get to 90, I think they win the division because I think that 90 because of what I just described in that division this year.
And I'm sorry you have to hear this for the 30,000th time, but you know my stance on this expanded wild card format. That third one is always going to be hanging out there. The Reds were actually set kind of a new low for what it took to win that wild card. I think previously the Marlins and Diamondbacks had taken that third wild card in the National League with six games over.
I want to say that, well, for sure the Diamondbacks had like 84 maybe a couple of years earlier.
I think
earlier.
It was six games over.
And I want to say somebody
might
have had 83.
Well, at any point, in any fact, anyway, is what I'm trying to say.
But there have been teams with 89 and 90 that have missed the playoffs.
Sure.
Since this format has been in play.
I tend to think that it's just going to be hanging out there. And if that holds true to form again in 26, your prediction of 88 to 90 is well within the realm of not just the third wild card, but potentially the second wild card spot as well.
Division winners. That's what I'm saying. They're going to win the division.
Forget the wild card. What am I talking about?
The Reds are going to win the division, and I'm saying Ellie De La Cruz is going to be the MVP. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
So are Reds fans going to turn and love you on social media this year?
Nobody's going to love me on social media.
Yeah.
Nobody ever.
Am I the heel? Am I the heel?
Well, you're definitely the heel. But that's okay. That's okay. I got the Kool-Aid.
That's
right. It's going to be LA MVP, Reds, division, champs, and they're going to open the playoffs at home. We haven't seen them play a home playoff game in 30-something years.
You know, it would be nice to.
And I think they even win a series. How about that?
That's
some Barry Larkin stuff right there.
That is some Barry Larkin.
Because that's the last time it freaking happened.
And all of it happened. Everything you said happened.
Yeah.
So, MVP, win a playoff series. That would be cool. I'll tell you, we flew across the country to L.A. to cover the wild card series last year. It would be nice to roll out of my bed in East Walnut Hills and drive 10 minutes down the hill to the ballpark for an MLB playoff game.
It would also be nice for a playoff series not to be over so quickly that you haven't finished reading our preview stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that was crazy. We showed up and then they said, okay, time to go home.
Yeah,
it's over.
That was it. But
so, Gordon, there you go. That's
listen.
Hey, I'm dropping the mic right there. No, you got nothing else.
No,
Mr.
Well, listen.
Mr. Debbie
hey,
Downer.
Listen.
Forget it. We're done. That's it for this edition of the Big Pod Machine season preview edition. That's Pat Brennan. I'm Gordon Whitmire. Phil Didion's doing the producing behind the scenes.
Love
there.
Love you, Phil.
And play ball.